We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 151. Scott, it's an early morning episode. How you doing?
Good. I don't want to complain about the Chicago games because they start at 8 o'clock, and I feel like I've been complaining about the times for baseball over the past 2 weeks because of the West Coast. But, I mean, I didn't go to bed till like 1 o'clock last night, and the game took 4 hours. It started late, and the original start time was 8 o'clock, so I am going to complain about the start time and the length of the game. The pace of play was absolutely ridiculous last night. It was like the first time I ever noticed it, and I think it was because 18 mound visits per half inning by Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, also the monsoon that happened in the seventh inning that just took everything to a standstill.
I guess, but they were still playing. I mean, things are still happening.
Yeah, but
you know what I mean?
Like, I mean, it was...
That didn't add an hour to the game.
It felt like an hour, just that inning alone. And I thought that was where the disaster was setting in. Now every time, we're going to get into everything, but now every time the Yankees bullpen comes in, it used to be, this is lights out for the other team. I feel comfortable right now. Now I'm on the edge of my seat sweating my ass off because it's scary when these guys are coming in. You don't know who's going to be on what night. Sometimes Tyler Clippard can get out of bases loaded jams. Other times he's given up 10 runs. I mean, it's a circus out there.
And then the wind, if you throw in the wind last night with every single fly ball causing a complete ruckus throughout the team. I mean, it was like there was someone up there and just like pegging the balls, throwing the balls down at the feet of every player. It was getting ridiculous to a point where there had to have been some kind of massive blow up that was eventually going to happen.
I love how the cameras just zoomed in on Joe West too, while it was absolutely torrential downpour in the seventh inning. Like, you're gonna call it? You're gonna bring a delay here? Are the tarps coming out? Because I feel like Joe West has been... Everyone is hating on Joe West recently.
Yeah, well, the stairs. I mean, the dude's he's kind of ice. But I tell you, they did not want to call that game, because if you have a delay, then you got to wait another 45 minutes to an hour to call it. And like, I'm like, please just play through it. Play through it.
It does make me think, though, that the central time zone, if you live in that time zone, it's probably optimal for sports, because you get the early start times on the East Coast, you get your normal start times in your own zone, and then the West Coast games aren't quite as late.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at some of these guys watching Yankees baseball on the West Coast in California, and I'm thinking they have a pretty good life, because the game starts at 5 o'clock. And when it's a Chicago game, it starts at 4, which is fine. It's a reason to get out of work a little earlier.
You can't do
stop
that every
doing
day.
Things. Yeah, but you know what? You have the whole night after you're done.
That's true.
You can do whatever you want. You can decompress. You can go to sleep after you've contemplated what just happened, whether good or bad. And then you have, you know, the entire night. You can get a good night's sleep with no problems. Football starts in the morning, so it's like it's breakfast and football. That's amazing. To me, it sounds... If I'm a sports fan, I think California is the best. And it's actually teetered my opinion on moving out there purely for that reason.
The problem every time I'm in California, it's usually for work. So I'm busy at 4 o'clock and I feel like I jump into the Yankee game and it's the bottom of the fifth inning. And I'm like, what the hell has happened over the last hour and a half?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a downside of it. You definitely have to manage your time. You have to be good at that.
You have to work less
or just work smarter. Isn't that what they say? Work smarter, not harder. Not longer, but smarter.
All right, guys, before we get into everything, I want to plug some of our Twitter accounts. If you guys are not following us on Twitter, what the hell are you doing? At Yankees Podcast is the show's Twitter handle. You can find me on Twitter at @Andrew_Rotondi. And Scott's is at Scott Reinen. Go follow us right now. We're always tweeting during the Yankee games. Scott and I were actually talking before the show started that it's like... The Yankee games are now two things. It's actually watching what's going on and then being first to Twitter to comment on it.
Yeah, which is not easy to do when you're on a delay if you're watching the game on a computer. And two, it's very difficult to really comprehend every single detail of a game when you're out there tweeting and trying to get some good tweets in. But I got to tell you, last night was a good night on Twitter. Good night on Twitter.
Yeah, well, when they win, it's good. When they lose, it's not. Weird how that happens, right?
Right.
Also, call the voicemail line. Monday's show, we always play voicemails at the end. It's one of my favorite parts of the podcast. So call that line, 646-480-0342. And also submit mailbag questions. We do mailbags on the Monday show as well. You can email us at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, and you can see the email form right there. All right, Scott, where do you want to start? Because I feel like there's three things going on with this team right now. One is the bullpen disaster. Two is all of the injuries and now the Matt Holliday illness. But three, also, the baby bombers are coming up, and there's a lot of youth on this team, and some of them are actually performing. So where do you want to start?
I think the overwhelming story right now is the injuries, because I think it plays into everything else. I think the injuries / illnesses / voodoo, whatever the hell you want to call whatever Matt Holliday has, is really I think one of the big reasons why the bullpen is such a disaster and why all these kids are coming up. I mean, it's all going back to the fact that we can't stay healthy right now.
What the hell is going on with Holliday? It started out as a mystery allergic reaction in Oakland, which you never know what's going on in that Oakland clubhouse. You know, Billy Bean's got some stuff going, like you said, voodoo. It's also a pit over there. There's rats running around. Maybe he got pink eye from some rat shit or something. But now they're saying viral infection. And the scary thing is that it keeps flaring up, and they don't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah, they've done all the tests, and he equated it to someone just taking all of his energy, and just he's got no energy at all. It's like almost mono symptoms.
But they ruled out mono. I saw.
Yeah, I know, but the same
that.
Similar symptoms, and I don't know. That's the scary thing. You're absolutely right. The fact that they can't pinpoint what's going on, but he's still having these symptoms. Is disconcerting, to say the least. That's never good. You want to be able to obviously diagnose something so that you could treat it. Well, if it's a mystery illness, it's voodoo, then you need a witch doctor, and that's probably the last line of defense.
I guess the good thing is that it's not contagious because no one else in the clubhouse has gotten it.
Well, I guess, but how do they know it's not contagious if they don't know what it is?
Well, no one else.
Maybe
no one
it takes
is...
a little while for it to set in. I have no idea.
Yeah, that's like a Stephen King book or something. All of a sudden, everyone on the Yankees just dropped dead from this weird infection.
What was that movie, Skinnier?
Thinner.
Where everybody just starts shrinking.
Skinnier. And I feel like there's like 12 Stephen King novels that have that same plot line, but... I mean, it's Holiday with the illness. It's Castro with the hamstring injury. And that's just another one. I mean, you lose Castro. He wouldn't have started the All-Star game, but he was in the running. I mean, he's an All-Star second baseman at this point. One of the Yankees' most consistent offensive players. He comes up lame, running down first baseline on Monday. And it's one of those things that Monday's game, I mean, you want to take away positives from it because Montgomery looks so good. And the offense got going. Tyler Austin hit a home run. But then you're like, well, shit. Castro's now going to the DL.
Yeah, it seems like whenever there's something good, you're taking two more steps back because there's a bigger storyline within the game itself. And, I mean, Castro, you're saying he's not going to start the All-Star game. And that's really because Houston comes out in freaking buckets and waves voting for
Altuve.
Their guys.
Altuve.
And Altuve's a stud. It. Yeah, well, Altuve's a stud. There's no doubt. But, I mean... he's definitely at that level. You know what I mean? He's performing. I mean, he's been one of the best hitters on the Yankees team and just carried the offense along with Judge basically throughout. Those two guys have been the most consistent by far. And when you lose a guy like that, then you don't know what to do to replace him. I mean, you have guys to come in and play that role like Torres, and then you have now Tyler Wade coming up, and you know, there's a bunch of guys that can play that role, but you're losing the power. You're losing that, you know, that big right-handed bat in the middle of your order. And, you know, I think he's one of the leaders on that team. So I think it's a problem. It's a big problem for losing your all-star second baseman.
As soon as he went out of the game, you looked around that infield and you had Tyler Austin at first base, Rob Refsnyder at second base, Torres was playing shortstop, and you had Headley at third base. You're like, what the hell just happened? Our infield was our strength like a week ago, and now we got all these guys from Scranton in the lineup tonight.
Well, I mean, you know what? Thank God we have a strong minor league system, because that is the only reason we are even afloat at this point, because we have guys have been called up and doing their job. I mean, there have been a lot of guys called up from AAA to the majors in this year and have really stepped up and done well. So, you know, you got to applaud those kids for gaming up, too.
That's what A-Rod was saying when he was calling the games. He said the Yankees are not 25 deep. They're 30 to 35 deep.
Yeah, it's true, and it's become evident. I mean, it's the proof is on the field right now. After, I mean, what we saw last night from Andujar, it's been impressive, especially guys that you're not expecting to be called up. I mean, Andujar was not on the radar to be called into the major leagues at any point soon.
Eight games in Scranton.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a necessity because of the Holiday injury. The Yankees needed a bat, and I mean, on the one hand, he earned the call-up in the sense that he was performing well in the minors, so good for him. But they called him up pretty much because they needed a guy to fill and they needed somebody on the 40-man roster, and that was Andujar.
Yeah, the 40-man roster, I think, was definitely the last deciding factor, because they didn't have to make a major roster move at that point. Although, I do believe that Rob Refsnyder's days are coming to an end. I mean, they have to be. Unless now you're seeing that Tyler Austin's hurt too, so they need some kind of a first baseman at some point. I mean, it's one thing after the other. It's crazy, but it just seems like as the pecking order is shaking out and you're looking at what this roster is and what's in the minor leagues, it seems like Refsnyder's time is about to come up. But that being said, Andujar did a really, really good job, and it seems like his bat, from what everybody says, his bat is major league ready. His bat is the reason he's on the major league team right now, and what they were really doing, why he needed that seasoning in the AAA, was because of his play in the field. Apparently, his third base skills aren't so sharp. They're not like the bat. They're not as far along. So
true.
That's one thing that we'll have to assess with our own eyes. But I have a feeling he's going to see a lot of DH.
Well, he is only 22 years old, and I know there was a bunch of stats going around. I mean, he was he had four RBIs and what did he have, three hits. I mean, he was the youngest. He made some history last night because he was the youngest guy to do that since Thurman Munson in 1969. First guy since Roy Weatherly in 1936 with four plus RBIs. I mean, unbelievable.
That's surprising.
Historic night for him.
And I was surprised. I didn't think four RBIs was going to put you in a category into these elite historical stats like that. I figured that would have been done a number of times.
Well, for the Yankees.
Yeah, it's still for the Yankees.
Still,
I mean,
usually
when you look at record books, I mean, you see a lot of Yankees right at the top sometimes. So there's, I don't know, it was surprising to me. But yeah, the guys, first of all, I was tweeting last night how when I'm watching him, I see Adrian Beltre, like that type of approach.
Aggressive.
He's really
swing.
Aggressive. Yeah, he's super confident at the plate. He swings hard. I mean, this dude just lets it fly. And he hit the ball hard three times last night. And it was impressive. That last shot to that last double was extremely impressive. And first at bat, you know, hard ground ball up the middle, driving in two runs with the bases loaded. Welcome to the show, kid.
Yeah, I tweeted because when he had the single in his second at bat and then Headley got thrown out at the plate, which was stupid send by Espada. But regardless, Andujar hit the ball 115 miles an hour off the bat. And just out of curiosity, I looked up Chase Headley's hardest hit ball this season, and it's 107. So
Yeah, come on. We all know Chase Headley's a finesse hitter.
Andujar, he's got some pop in that bat. And yeah, you said he looks like Adrian Beltre. From a physical standpoint, especially his facial features, I thought he looked like Mariano Duncan.
Yeah, I saw that. When I saw you tweet that, I did a double look. I think he's a little thicker than Mariano Duncan, and I think he will thicken out, but I see what you're saying. I love the fact that he's certainly not Adrian Beltre from what everybody's saying in the field, because Beltre is a gold glove third baseman. The guy's just a stud at third. But that approach, I mean, I love that. I like the fact that, you know, you add in a hard-hitting, free-swinging guy who just lights up the ball, along with, well, you know, Judge, who's now a patient hitter, Gary Sanchez, who can work a count but also could be aggressive. It's kind of a nice little mix in there.
I want to go back to Tyler Austin. I mean, it's really ironic, I guess. It's cruel now that he's not on the DL yet, but he's injured. Girardi said we can't rule out the DL for Tyler Austin. I guess he was experiencing some hamstring soreness or some thigh soreness even before he got the call up.
Yeah.
He looked really bad in his first couple games, but I think he was pressing. Once he got to Chicago, he had a couple hits. He had the home run on Monday night, and now he's out of the lineup. And in a bizarre twist, Chris Carter has accepted his option to Scranton. So I don't think we've seen the last of Chris Carter.
No, there's no way we have. I mean, look at what Tyler Austin, if you look at his, career, his short career, it's meddled with injury. This guy has a hard time staying on the field, and that's unfortunately one of the knocks for him. And this is a hamstring injury, which is, you know, one of those soft tissue things that can be reoccurring. And I don't know, it feels like one of those reoccurring things to me. We're hearing Greg Bird is unknown at this point.
Yeah.
And Girardi even made comments last night about, you know, not being surprised if we don't see him this year. All year.
Unbelievable.
That would be two straight years after we see a fall, after we see a late season surge from Greg Bird. He gets us all excited, and then 2 years on the injured list? Come on, that's crazy.
I mean, I've already ruled out Bird in my mind. Just if he comes back, great, but I've ruled him out in my mind for this season at any sort of performance. I don't think we're gonna get 10% of what we expected, what I expected from Greg Bird.
Well, that's certainly not what you expected. There's no doubt. There's 10% that's a large.
You got to rule him out
from
this standpoint, though.
You have to.
I mean, he's
because there's nothing saying that he's going to be back.
The cortisone shot did not work. He says, I still feel pain. And I don't know if he's just being a pussy or not, but,
yeah.
But like, I mean, clearly this guy has issues. I mean, it's different from the shoulder, it's a completely different situation. But
yeah.
We talked about this with Mark Teixeira, right? Whether it's a shoulder or a wrist or a knee or an ankle, it's just injuries. Some guys are injury prone. Some guys can't stay healthy, and other guys can.
Tell me you don't want to go back and rewatch that video of him walking by Jeter now and look at his facial reactions again.
Maybe he was limping. Maybe he was like, ow, ow,
there was,
ow.
Yeah. He's like, I'm a bitch. He's just limping around Derek Jeter. I'm not worthy to be around you. The high school quarterback is here, and I'm just a punk. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his deal is, man. But it's disconcerting. It's very disappointing at this point, honestly.
Extremely
because we were
disappointing.
Not even MVP numbers that you were expecting, or that, you know, we were all expecting good things when we see what he does in spring training. But for him just to not be on the field is so utterly disappointing to see now that that first base is an issue. And we all thought going into the season, it was locked down. The future's here. And now we have Greg Bird. And now it's just it's a rotisserie of who the hell knows.
I don't think I was that outlandish. I mean, I was very high on Bird. I mean, he looked amazing in spring training. But to say he was going to be in MVP talks this year after that spring training, I don't think that was outlandish of me to say.
Well, I disagree with you because you're saying MVP, that's most valuable player in the entire league, when this guy has only done, 2 months of 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, and then coming off of an injury.
Plus an epic spring training.
And we're talking about spring training, which you've also talked about. Not really. It's still spring training.
Go back and listen to the tape. I said he'll receive MVP votes. I didn't say he was going to win the MVP. And hell, look, Aaron Judge is going to win the MVP this year at this point. So
will you stop saying that? You need to stop.
If Aaron Judge doesn't win it, Greg Bird will win it. If Greg Bird doesn't win it, Gary Sanchez, I'm going to curse the whole damn team.
Jesus, I think we need Dom to go back and listen to the videotape so we can hear exactly what was said about Greg Bird.
Speaking of Judge, though, he continues to lead the league in walks and on-base percentage. In addition to home runs, he's up there in OPS, all the other power numbers. Batting average, he's second to Ben Gamel. How about that?
Hey, he is having a hell of a year out there, looking like Jesus himself out in
Good
Seattle.
Good for Ben Gamel.
Yeah, I mean, he gets traded off of being named the MVP of AAA in the International League, right? Wasn't that? It happened like right afterwards or right before?
Right before. It was like he received the award, and then Cashman was like, hey, congratulations, you're off to Seattle.
Do you even remember who we got?
Yeah, I was looking it up. A couple of very young, like single-A pitchers. I can't remember their names. I just looked it up the other day when I was tweeting about Gamel. But yeah, like low-level pitchers with high upside type guys that we'll probably never see.
Right. And Ben Gamel's out there leading. His batting average is high. He's running into walls. He's stealing bases. The dude looks like an all-world player. He looks like the kind of guy that you could get behind that would be really good for a team like this.
Well,
but we've talked about it. I know the outfield is completely crowded.
Yeah,
where
what are you
going to
do? I mean, Cashman.
I guess
was sitting
there. I don't understand the trade. I don't understand the trade at that point. Then for what they got.
Well, because
I guess that's,
Cashman's hands were tied because you got a guy who should be in the major leagues clearly. But you have no place for him. Other teams know that. They're not going to offer you a lot to get him because you have to give him away or essentially just stash him in your minor leagues, which you're not going to do.
Yeah, it was a tough spot. I definitely understand that. And I certainly don't think they thought he's going to be the player he is today. I mean, this is a guy that's also proving a little fluky. Well, he's been putting together, 2 months now? I mean, he's been playing a lot out there.
Yeah, someone tweeted me that his BABIP, batting average on balls in play, is like 450, which is like 150 points over the league average.
Yeah, look, at bottom line, good for Ben Gamel. This is a very similar outcome that I'm hoping for Rob Refsnyder, to tell you the truth. I hope he gets an opportunity somewhere and he lights it up.
As we were talking about, though, the outfield is extremely crowded, not only at the major league level, but in the minor league level with prospects. One of those is Dustin Fowler, and he got called up to Scranton, but then immediately pulled from the Rail Riders doubleheader. Al Padrique, the Rail Riders manager, said he's fine, but it's out of my hands, and we're going to figure out what's going to happen, which is very vague. You almost think maybe trade situation.
Yeah, he's been having a great year in AAA this year. I mean, he's been among... I think he started off slow and has really worked back. And when we were talking with Donnie, I mean, he was naming Dustin Fowler as one of their, you know, one of the best players in AAA. He's obviously one of the top outfield prospects in the system. This is a guy that is, you know, I think he hit like 280 last year. He hits power. He can run. He's kind of a five-tool guy. And he's definitely under the radar, especially when you're talking about the prospects in the system because of all the trades and, you know, the prodigious numbers that we're seeing and reputation of Clint Frazier and some of these other guys, but he's a guy that's perfect for a trade. Honestly, like this is a very good trade candidate and yeah, super vague. I mean, why are you being held out of a doubleheader if you're going to be called up? Because if you're being called up, usually you're on the move to wherever the city, the team will be in Chicago or Houston. And the other very strange thing about this whole deal is like, why are we talking about Dustin Fowler being called up to the major leagues as an outfielder with the current situation and what's happening. It doesn't fit to me. I don't understand it. To me, they need to make a first base move. If Tyler Austin truly is hurt, if there's a hamstring injury and he's going to be going on the DL, where's the move for first? Because you can't walk into a – you can't have Austin Romine as your first baseman. Then you have no backup catcher. Torreyes is your emergency catcher. Ref Snyder is your starting first baseman. It's just there's no depth at first base. I don't get it.
It's a mess right now. Girardi even said that – every team goes through injuries. I think this is a little extreme, but it's about how you get through these injuries, how you manage this downtime. I mean, I know the Cubs went through this sort of last year around this time. I'm not comparing the Yankees to the 2016 Cubs because that Cubs team was way better than this Yankees team. But they were able to get through it and not completely sink. I feel like the Yankees have half their body underwater at this point. They're treading water. It's getting scary. Like you said, I mean, for first base, I know who it's going to be. It's going to be Chris Carter.
It's going to be Chris Carter. Yeah, I mean, can we give Choi a look at first? I mean, why not? Mike Ford, weren't we talking about Mike Ford? I think he's in AA right now. Dude, maybe he's in AAA. Who knows?
I would rather the Yankees hold open tryouts for first base than have Chris Carter back up on this team.
No, I totally agree. There are people that are on the couch right now that, in my opinion, would be doing a better job at first base than even honestly, just for a psyche, just for our own mental health. Please don't run Chris Carter back out there. We know what he is. We know what he is. We don't want him there.
We already paid our respects. We can't pay our respects again.
Yeah. No, there's we can't take those back either. they're out there. They're out in the Twitter world. Nobody likes Chris Carter. He's a running joke. Don't bring him back.
Montgomery, though, I want to talk about Montgomery. His performance on Monday night was probably his best of the season. 7 innings, 8 strikeouts, only 1 earned run, 1 walk. He's limiting his walks in his last 3 starts, which is huge. Because yeah. I think the main complaint we had, and it's a complaint of a rookie that's had a really, really good rookie season, but our complaint was he gets too deep into counts and he walks too many hitters. But he's seemed to have changed that, which is why you see him go 7 innings on Monday night.
Yeah, you say complaint. I say, you know, an area where he needs to improve on.
Criticism.
There's different terminology we can use for a rookie pitcher, because I think that when you're coming up, obviously you're figuring a lot of things out at one time. You're going to go back to your stuff, what got you there. But at the same time, you need to, you know, manage the professional hitters that are in front of you. You need to manage the atmosphere, and I think he's done a really good job. And you're seeing to me very fast progress. I mean, this is a guy who, like you said, coming out with his best outing thus far, and you know the strikeouts are racking up there. He's limiting the walks. Impressive stuff. I mean, he looks really, really good. And people are throwing out there as he's one of the best lefties in the American League right now. And when you look at the numbers, not far off.
Yeah, the numbers also prove that he's having the best season by a Yankee pitcher, Yankee rookie pitcher since Andy Pettit.
And Yankee pitcher, you weren't too far off when you were saying Yankee pitcher, because this season he's up there. I mean, he's pitching as well as anybody. And we were talking about this last time when we're looking at, there was a mailbag question about, you know, if we're to go and get a trade or call somebody up for the rotation, who's moving, who's leaving. And I think what we circled around that there's most likely in that situation, you're looking at an injury or something that's off. You're not just going to straight up replace a guy, because Montgomery, who would be the one that you would think would be replaceable because he's the fifth starter, he's a rookie. He's not.
No.
He's the guy. He's cemented into that rotation.
Absolutely.
And there's a reason for it, because he's pitching out of his mind right now. And good for him. Really, really impressive to watch him pitch.
The injury situation with Sabathia. You don't know what Sabathia is going to be when he comes back from injury, or even when he's going to come back from injury. And when he does come back, who's to say another pitcher won't get injured? Because with the way this team is going, that's how it's going to work out.
Well, and that's just the way starting pitching is. I mean, there are multiple injuries within a rotation every single year. So you have to have a number of starters ready to go. And when you're just relying on, you know, some of your fringe major league guys to come in and consistently come in and fill in for people who are on the DL. And again, Sabathia, older guy, probably going to be, you know, missing a couple starts here and there, whether it's a DL stint or, you know, just missing a start here and there. It's going to happen, because that's just the nature of the beast. An older guy is going to miss time. And we have no idea how he's going to come back. So, You know, guys like Chance Adams are going to have their opportunity at some point.
Mama Sabathia was wrong about the diagnosis. It's longer than 2 weeks.
A mother being wrong about their child. That's a strange phenomenon.
You know what I noticed about Montgomery on Monday is that his curveball and off speed stuff seemed to get better as the game went on. He was getting a lot of swings and misses, and that White Sox team is a free swinging team. White Sox are a bad team. They're in a rebuild stage, but Montgomery was able to make them chase and really take advantage of them.
His curveball was a wiffle ball. True 12-6. I mean, it was on point. And I don't know how much goes into this, but I can tell you it goes into it. Having the confidence to bury that curveball, to bounce that curveball, to throw it low in the zone.
So that
you know there is a chaseable pitch that looks like something else coming out of your hand. You got to have the confidence in your catcher to block that pitch so that he can block it and throw down to first. If it's a strike three, block it, keep the runners intact. That's a big, big thing for a confident in when you're talking about confidence in a starting pitcher. And Austin Romine has that confidence, not just of Tanaka. We're not talking about a personal catcher situation. We're talking about the confidence of a pitching staff, because that's what Romine has right now. And Gary Sanchez is teetering on that line. I'm not saying he's lost it by any means, but I'm saying he's teetering, and he really needs to make some marked improvements and adjustments now. And we saw that last night with the intervention, as John Boy called it on his reaction, the intervention or the swarming of every person who's ever played catcher in the Yankees, on the Yankees coaching staff, and Austin Romine to talk to Gary Sanchez after, you know, a couple rough innings with Tanaka. But I'm telling you, I really hope they nip it in the ass right now. It doesn't become an overwhelming problem.
That intervention was completely warranted, because we touched on this in our last episode. And some people, we had somebody on Twitter saying, you guys are idiots for criticizing Sanchez. He's not the problem on this team. We're not saying Sanchez is the problem on this team, but that doesn't mean we need to ignore the fact that he's looking like he's regressing behind the plate.
It's if you're not saying something about Gary Sanchez's defense at this point, you're not watching the games with an objective eye. You're looking at it with rosy glasses and saying that I love the Yankees and the Yankees can do no wrong. That's fine. Gary Sanchez is absolutely the future of this team. I have no doubt about that, and I will never question that. The fact is when you see a regression in defensive skills from a very important position on the field, especially with a young pitching staff, with a pitching staff that's struggling badly right now, and you need to depend on the catcher, that's a problem. And it's not just a problem with Gary Sanchez's defense, because it leaks into the rest of the pitching staff. It leaks into the team. And it needs to be addressed. There's no doubt about it. He needs to improve.
And we know he's capable of doing it, because he did it all of last year. And then after the intervention, he was blocking balls again. So he can do it. It was a mental lapse, and he was getting lazy, and that's unacceptable. If he was just incapable of doing it, like Jesus Montero was physically incapable of playing catcher. Gary Sanchez is not incapable. He's very capable. So it's just a mental thing. He's got to concentrate on doing it, and he can't have that lapse in concentration.
I was semi-joking, but Jesus Montero does play first base and is available. You never know. Nice little resurrection.
The funny thing is, he's not even that old at this point. He's probably like 27 years old.
Yeah, how old is Pineda? They're about the same age. So,
yeah.
No, look, there was one interesting thing from last night after I was reading all of the interviews or the quotes from the beat guys after the game, because – again, it was 12:30 and I couldn't sleep because I was excited about the game and reading about everything that was happening. And one of the interesting things that kind of came out to me was that, I don't know if you remember that double play ball that Gary Sanchez did not run out. And I was getting on him for like, you got to run that out. I don't care what happens. Run the ball out. And Girardi talked about that at the end, saying that he didn't run that out by design. And they said it was by design because he had a groin, you know, the groin flare up in Oakland, and they didn't want to push it. Is the groin a problem?
No, because you know why that's bullshit? Because on Sunday, he tried to go first to third on a base hit, and he failed. So if he really was trying to not push it, he wouldn't have gone first to third. He would have just stopped his ass at second base, which would have been the right base running decision on Sunday, because Headley was coming up and the Yankees were still down a run. So that's bullshit. He just didn't run the ball out.
I agree with you, but I think it's if that's the case, then that's Girardi just, you know, going to bat for his guy and just protecting him, which is good. That's fine. But, you know, let's not bring up an injury situation when said player is not getting down and blocking balls in the dirt. And I have to believe that your groin has a lot to do with getting down that low and being comfortable in the dirt.
If they were truly concerned about Gary Sanchez's groin, he would not be catching.
Who the hell would be? That's the problem.
Well, I mean,
maybe he'd be playing first base.
Yeah, he'd be playing first base or he'd be DHing. They would do something else if they were actually really concerned with the groin. That's totally Girardi protecting his player, which I'm fine with. I mean, that's the manager's job, but that's bullshit.
Yes, it's bullshit.
Okay. So Tuesday's game was one of the worst losses of the year for the Yankees. Would you agree?
It was definitely one of the more frustrating games I've ever watched.
I'm going to tell you why.
That I can remember, because I was sitting there just with anxiety. My back was tight. I'm just riddled with anxiousness throughout the end of that game. It was terrible.
It was a microcosm of everything that's gone wrong for the Yankees over the last 2 weeks. And it all started in the eighth and ninth inning on Monday's game when the bullpen could not protect, was it a 5-run lead? And they had to use Betances and Chapman in that game, which is unacceptable. Holder couldn't get out of a mess in the eighth inning. Shreve couldn't get out of a mess in the ninth inning. So the Yankees, two guns at the end, had to come and save them. That caused them to be unavailable. Chapman was unavailable on Tuesday night. Betances was probably tired. Not excusing Betances, but he was probably a little fatigued in the ninth inning on Tuesday. And the bullpen absolutely melted down. 6 walks and 1 hit batter in 2 innings pitched on Tuesday night. I'm shocked the White Sox only were able to win it on their last batter. I'm shocked they didn't take the lead earlier in the game with that kind of numbers.
Yeah, it was, I was literally in physical pain watching that game. It was very difficult to watch. And I agree with you to an extent that, you know, Monday had were contributing factors to what happened on Tuesday. But still, Betances, I think he only had thrown 25 pitches in the first 2 outings, and who knows what the B-whips were at. But the fact is that Betances still has to come in and close that out.
Totally.
I don't care if it's a third time out. You should be able to pitch on the third time out, and you should be able to come in and close that out. I think if Chapman hadn't just come off of the DL, he would have been the guy to come in. But I think Girardi is you know, being careful with him at this point. Look, I'm going to look at a couple positives from here, because I did see one thing that I thought was positive that people are kind of overlooking, in my opinion. I thought Clippard came in and actually did a really good job.
Oh, my God.
I thought Clippard, honestly, if you look at the stuff that he was throwing, was pitching and throwing some of the best pitches I've seen in a long time from him. Because, yes, he had, he gave up a run because it was of a walk. It was actually still a good pitch. That 3-2 pitch was a good pitch. It was not a bad pitch. His changeup was good. It was down. He was actually rising that fastball. It was effective. It was a sneaky fast. He was using it to the way it's supposed to be used. And I thought he pitched pretty well. I thought he gained some confidence back. I'm hoping it was kind of one of those games where we see Clippard just, you know, get back, because, you know, as much as we all shit on him and want to DFA the guy, that's not happening. You look at the rest of the bullpen. It's not happening.
The guy walked out in June
with a 1-point-something ERA. I have a number in here somewhere. But he pitched very well. He has been terrible lately. I will never say he hasn't been terrible. But we need him to be back, because we need him to be pitching well, because he is a veteran guy that's going to be in this bullpen for the long term. And if he's not pitching well, then there's bigger problems for this team.
Yeah, your number was 11 runs in his last 4.2 innings pitched. And that includes 3 outs on Tuesday, and he only gave up 1 run, but I don't even think it was his run. He escaped the bases loaded jam that, or it was a first and second jam, right? He ended
up
loading
the
bases, but he escaped the jam. The Yankees still had the lead. I don't think you and I want to DFA Clippard. We want to get Clippard right, because we know the Yankees bullpen needs him. It might sound scary at this point because how bad he's been, but the Yankee bullpen does need Clippard or somebody to fill Clippard's shoes.
And I think one of the biggest misconceptions when you're talking about guys to DFA, because everybody keeps throwing Carter and Clippard into the same boat when we're talking about, okay, now we've gotten rid of Carter, let's just DFA Clippard, get it over with. Well, Clippard in June had a 1.64 ERA. Like, this is a guy that has a proven track record
entering
of being
June.
Of being an effective relief pitcher late in the games. He's got a track record of this. Chris Carter has a track record of hitting 200 and striking out 50% of the time. Yes, he ran into 40 home runs last year, but look, we've all seen him play now. We know what he looks like. We know that the numbers are a little crazy, and we know where he is. I mean, this is the guy that we know. If he doesn't hit that ball out of the ballpark, you're getting a guy who's striking out 50% of the time and hitting at a 200 clip. That's it. That's the guy. Clippard is a guy that can actually pitch as an effective major league guy in the back of a bullpen. That's somebody you want to be right on your team.
Here's where I think Tuesday night went wrong for Girardi, and it's the fact that you got a lead going into the eighth inning, and you go to Domingo German in that situation. Severino had been absolutely filthy. I know he had 105 pitches, but when your choices are Domingo German or Luis Severino with 105 pitches, give me Luis Severino. That's option one. Or if you're comfortable enough to use Clippard to get out of a jam in the eighth inning, why not give him a clean inning?
Because I don't think he didn't want to use Clippard in that point, but he realized he couldn't stay with German.
He was willing to use Clippard.
No, I think he was backed into a corner. Apparently, everybody else was not available. I mean, that was just Green was not available. Batanta is not available.
Why was Green not available?
I don't know. That's one of the big questions.
Green didn't pitch on Monday.
He said he was unavailable. I mean, when you listen to what he said, he didn't say why. If you're listening to the post game interviews, he just said unequivocally unavailable. That's it. I don't know why. But so you're looking at who is available and you want German to go out there who's pitched well. He's a guy who's coming to pitch well.
He's a rookie. He's a rookie.
That's fine. This team is littered with rookies. That's no longer an excuse.
But
it's a guy on the team. There's no longer an excuse.
He was completely overwhelmed.
I mean, that's what happened. That was the result. Yes. But going into it, you got to have, when you're looking at who's out there, who else are you going to throw? There weren't very many options.
Severino.
Okay, there's your option.
You tell Severino, listen, Sevy, you've got a nut up because I'm not going to Domingo German. We need this win. Severino, Girardi was probably looking at it. His binder said 105 pitches.
I was going to say, nutting up is not in the binder. Nutting up is not a chapter.
But you have to look at the game situation, and Severino was cruising. It was an easy 105 pitches. There's such thing as an easy 100 pitches and a hard 100 pitches. Nathan Eovaldi threw all hard 100 pitches in five innings. That was an easy 105 pitches for Luis Severino. He could have gone back in the eighth inning. And people are probably listening to this saying I'm a hypocrite because on the last episode I said Girardi should have taken Severino out in his previous start. You have to look at the game situation. Severino was laboring against Anaheim. I would not have sent him back out there for the seventh inning against Anaheim. This time, he was absolutely dominating the White Sox bats. He gave up one little cue job to Jose Abreu. That was the only really hit the White Sox got off of him that led to a run. What did he have? I know it's in here somewhere. 10 strikeouts, 11 strikeouts? He was dominating that lineup. He could have gone out there for the eighth inning. It's about game situation, not just number of pitches. If we only just go on number of pitches, I mean, that was the whole Nolan Ryan thing when he overhauled the Rangers pitching staff. You got to look at game situations sometime, Girardi.
First of all, unfair shot at Nathan Eovaldi, first of all. Second of all, you're right. I mean, I think the game situation and the game flow, when you're looking at it, you have to assess what's going on. But the thing that we're not taking into consideration at that point is that that doesn't matter, because that would actually be reading a game with your own eyes and not looking at what's in that goddamn binder and saying he's at 100 pitches, he's not starting a new inning. Because that's in there. I guarantee it's in there. There's a whole chapter written on that, the fact that you got to protect your players. But Michael Kay made actually a very good point last night, and it was kind of an overview of all of this, you know, protecting your players. And it was not about Luis Severino, but just in general. You're looking at how everybody is this hard line on this pitch count, but look at what the Mets happened. The Mets last year and the year before just babied the living shit out of all these guys. They had the next Braves starting rotation of the 90s Braves starting rotation with the Mets, and every single one of them now is hurt. They babied them. They made sure that everything was protected. And now what's happening? They're all going under the knife. They're not pitching well. They're hurt. So the bottom line is that there's no rhyme or reason. There's no like binder way to go about these guys and to protect them from being injured. In my opinion, you got to let these guys go out there and just throw. If something is feeling wrong, then you address it. If something looks wrong, you address it. But I don't think the pitch count, when you're talking between 100 and 120, is that big of a deal.
Well, that was going to be my next point. Say instead of 105 pitches, Severino was at 97. Would he have gone back out there?
Probably not. I don't know. You look at the Little League rules. Are you going to go over 100 on the first at-bat? I don't know.
All I'm saying is, like you just said, the difference between 10 pitches, yeah, maybe 10 pitches when you add up 30 starts, but we're not talking about 30 starts. If he say, went out there and finished the game at 123 pitches, and Girardi really wanted to give him a break in his next start, he could have, because you don't know what the situation is going to be in his next start. Maybe he goes out there in his next start, and the Yankees score 15 runs, and you don't need him to go deep into the game. But you needed him to go deep in this game, and Girardi didn't let him do it. And it bit them in the ass, because the bullpen absolutely shit all over themselves.
At the same time, you're looking at a guy who's taking you through seven innings, and you'd hope that your bullpen can get six outs.
You hope. I'm not comfortable with sending German out there and crossing my fingers and hoping to die.
Yeah. It's hard to blame Girardi on a lot of these cases, in my opinion, because what's happening is the players are not being effective on the field as Major League Baseball players. And when that doesn't happen, the manager's going to look like shit because he's putting them in bad situations. Or, I mean, we could, you know, dice it up and serve it however you want. At the end of the day, the pitchers that are going out there, I mean, German doesn't, if he actually throws strikes and the ball is put in play, he may get two quick outs. But the fact is that he can't throw the ball over the plate. To me, that's inexcusable for anybody. I don't care if you're a rookie, a veteran, you know, if this is your first game or if this is your, you know, 500th game. Throw the ball over the goddamn plate.
I guess. Yeah. On the one hand, you're right. I mean, what's Girardi to do when the bullpen has, where's the stat in here? The bullpen's ERA this month. It's the worst in the league. Our 6.32 ERA since June 13th for the bullpen. Fourth worst in baseball. 32 walks, which is the worst.
32 walks. That's terrible. That's the number you circled.
2 weeks. All of the,
yeah, 32 walks in a bullpen in 2 weeks. That's insane.
Right. So, I mean, and you're absolutely right. Girardi's not out there throwing the pitches. He's not walking the guys. It's the pitchers. But there's also bad decisions he's made. It's not, you can't just put 100% of the blame on one thing. It's a combination of things.
I get it, but 32 walks, that's scattered between a lot of pitchers.
Oh, it's horrible.
That's a lot of pitchers. Betances. So who's to say that Betances comes out and doesn't walk guys like he did?
No, you know, he did, like, walk guys. He walked two guys in the ninth inning.
That's what I'm saying. My point is that it doesn't matter who's going out there.
The guys need to perform. At the end of the day, the guys need to perform. But when you send Betances out there and he doesn't perform, you're like, okay, well, Girardi went to his best weapon. Domingo German is not Girardi's best weapon. The Domingo German situation, I put more on Girardi than I do on German. German's like a chicken with his head cut off out there. He's completely overwhelmed by the moment.
Throw the ball over the plate.
Oh boy. Wednesday, it was a blowout win that didn't feel like a blowout win.
It was a fun game. I got to tell you, it was a fun game. The fact is that we saw a guy coming off of an injury, making his first start of the season.
Rodon.
Carlos Rodon, who was a high draft pick, in 2014, I think he was a first-round draft pick for the White Sox, or the Brewers, maybe, and it came over in a trade, something along those lines. No, he was drafted by the Brewers originally, went to college. So he was a first-round draft pick by the White Sox, coming up pretty quickly. I mean, that's a pretty fast rise. Had a good year, and I guess his biggest problem is the strike zone. talking about guys who can't throw
over
the ball.
Seems kind of important.
Yeah, he definitely was falling behind hitters. He was walking guys. That first inning was pretty brutal. And thank God we got that two out base hit by Andujar to really, you know, put a number of runs on. Because if the Yankees came out of that first inning with only one run, I was going to be very disappointed. And I think the game might have gone a little bit differently.
Well, ironically, Andujar was the only guy to hit Rodon. He only allowed two hits.
Wow, if you look at the box, I didn't realize that. Good for him then.
Yeah, and then the bullpen comes in and the Yankees extend the lead. I mean, Wade gets his first RBI. And Wade, I want to give credit to Wade on Tuesday night in his first Major League at-bat. Pinch hitting, so he's thrown in there cold, has a tremendous at-bat, works a walk, comes around to score what we thought was going to be the go-ahead or the tying run on Judge's RBI single. Really, really great at-bat from Tyler Wade.
Yeah, and you can see the excitement all over his face. I mean, when he got to second base, just like clapping his hands, pumped up. That's baseball at its most fun point ever. Guy getting called up, doing a good job, and just, you know, getting all into the game. It was a lot of fun to watch him. First of all, he is fast. That dude flies. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how fast. I saw the stolen bases. I think he had 24 in AAA. But
that's what Donnie was saying. Donnie Collins was saying. Yeah, great.
When you're looking at him, it's evident the dude can wheel for sure. So that's exciting to see. And yeah, that was a hell of an at bat. I mean, that's a tough situation to be thrown. Talk about a rookie being thrown into a tough situation. That was one of them that kept his cool. So
that's why it's great. I mean, for everything that has gone wrong for the Yankees, you look at what Wade and Andujar and some other young guys have done over the last couple weeks. Those have been really positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're thrown into situations where you weren't expecting them to be coming up. And
totally, out of necessity. You know, those are because of injuries. Their call-ups are because of injuries.
And when you're looking at that as the player, you're saying, opportunity is knocking right now. I got to take advantage of this. I'm going to play my ass off. And that's what's happening. And I love it. You know, we've talked about this at nauseam too, over the past 3 years, really, with these guys coming up together, playing together, winning together. You're seeing a lot of them right now, all together, on the major league roster.
I love
it. If you don't think that helps a guy come up onto this team and fit right in and slot right in, it's like old times. It's like, hey, this is what we did last year. This is what we did the year before in AA. This is what we did in Tampa. No problem. Familiar faces make you more comfortable at the plate, playing the game. And then, you know, things just naturally happen. And that's what's going on. I love it. It's awesome.
You see it in the dugout after these guys get a big hit or something. I mean, Judge and Wade and Ref Snyder and all the young guys are always just huge smiles on their faces, high-fiving. I mean, we've said this over the past year, probably, that the chemistry in the minors will translate to the majors. And like you just said, we're seeing it. It's awesome. Also good, positive from Wednesday was Tanaka. He did not have his good stuff, but he battled. He was not battling earlier in the season. He didn't have his good stuff. He was leaving balls up, and it was home run Tanaka, and the game was out of hand quicker than you could blink an eye. But he battled in this game, got into a couple jams, escaped a couple jams. So he followed up his really, really good start against Texas with a start that is a step in the right direction for him as far as battling.
Yeah, definitely. He was getting out of jams, and I saw that. I don't know if it was the same level of intensity, but I definitely saw, that intense look on his face. It seemed like he was dialed in. Whereas when he was giving up all those home runs, he just seemed lost and confused, and just like, oh, woe is me. I can't believe this is happening to me. And I'm not seeing that on his face over these last two starts, which is to me a very good thing. I think body language is important with a pitcher. That's why I think Pineda drives me insane. But when you see what Tanaka did, you're right. He didn't have his good stuff, but he was battling. There was definitely some visible frustration, I think, with him and Sanchez, going on with some of the calls. They were definitely not on the same page, and they got through it. That's a good thing. And again, this is the time when they need to figure that stuff out. And I'm glad that we put together another start after the dominant start that was positive. So we're staying on the same trajectory with Tanaka now.
You got to win this series. You're at a point where you can take 3 out of 4 from the White Sox on the road, after blowing a game on Tuesday night. So you got to win this series. You got to start getting momentum back up the hill. It was a snowball effect down the hill with all these injuries, all the bullpen meltdowns, all of the bad losses. You got to get going uphill again. They can do it with a win on Thursday night going into Houston, which is... they're a juggernaut at this point. So you got to win this game on Thursday night.
Yeah, it's important, and it's not getting any easier. With Houston coming up, with all of the injuries that have amassed, with all these, you know, these kids coming up, it's going to be a battle. But like Girardi said, this is kind of one of those times where, you know, you can have a team that is battle-tested later in the year, and you look back at a situation and how you stayed above, how you battled back, and how you really just, you know, were determined to not let these injuries sink you. And these kids coming up and playing well, this is one of those, you know, look yourself in the mirror moments where you got to come out there and it doesn't matter who's playing. You got to, like you said, nut up and start getting this momentum, because Houston's going to be a freaking challenge. It always is.
Hashtag nut up should be the new motto on Twitter. All right, guys, reminder, call the voicemail line 646-480-0342 for Monday's show. Also submit mailbag questions and tweet us. We will talk to you guys in a few days.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show.
Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.